returning to Napoleon Hill's original text. The camera makes a perfect allegory for the process of creative thought. First comes the selection of the object to be exposed before the camera. This represents one's definite chief aim in life. Then comes the actual operation of recording a clear outline of that purpose through the lens of autosuggestion on the sensitized plate of the subconscious mind. Here, infinite intelligence steps in and develops the outline of that purpose into a physical form appropriate to the nature of the purpose. The part that you must play is clear. You select the picture to be recorded, your definite chief aim, then you fix your conscious mind on this purpose with such intensity that it communicates with the subconscious mind through autosuggestion and registers that picture. You then begin to watch for and to expect manifestations of physical realization of the subject of that picture. Bear in mind that you do not sit down and wait, nor do you go to bed and sleep with the expectation of awaking to find that infinite intelligence has showered you with the object of your definite chief aim. You must work to make it happen in accordance with the instructions laid down in Lesson 9, with full faith and confidence that natural ways and means for the attainment of the object of your definite purpose will open to you at the proper time and in a suitable manner. The way may not open suddenly from the first step to the last. Often it opens only one step at a time. Therefore, when you are conscious of an opportunity to take the first step, take it without hesitation, and do the same when the second and the third and all subsequent steps essential for the attainment of the object of your definite chief aim are manifested to you. Infinite intelligence will not command your bank to place a definite sum of money in your account just because you suggested this to your subconscious mind, but infinite intelligence will open to you the way in which you may earn or borrow that money and place it in your account yourself. Infinite intelligence will not throw out the present incumbent of the White House and make you president instead. But infinite intelligence would most likely, under the proper circumstances, influence you to prepare yourself to fill that position and then help you to attain it through regular methods of procedure. Do not rely on miracles for the attainment of the object of your definite chief aim. Rely on the power of infinite intelligence to guide you through natural channels with the aid of natural laws toward its attainment. Do not expect infinite intelligence to bring to you the object of your definite chief aim. Instead, expect infinite intelligence to direct you toward that object. As a beginner, do not expect infinite intelligence to move quickly in your behalf. But as you become more adept in the use of the principle of autosuggestion, and as your faith and understanding grow, you will see the realization of your definite chief aim and its translation into physical reality. You did not walk the first time you tried, but as you matured, you walked without effort. Keep this in mind, and you will understand why you cannot reasonably expect infinite intelligence to circumvent natural laws and provide you with its full knowledge and power until you have prepared yourself to use this knowledge and power. If you want a fair example of what may happen to a person who suddenly comes into control of power, study some newly rich or someone who has inherited a fortune. Money power in the hands of John D. Rockefeller is not only in safe hands, but it is also in hands where it is serving mankind throughout the world, blotting out ignorance, destroying diseases, and serving in 1,000 other ways. But place John D. Rockefeller's fortune in the hands of a young person who has not yet finished high school, and you would have another story to tell. I will have more to say on this subject in Lesson 14, Volume 4. If you have ever done any farming, you understand that certain preparations are necessary before a crop can be produced from the ground. You know, of course, that grain will not grow in the woods, that it requires sunshine and rain for its growth. Likewise, you understand that the farmer must plow the soil and properly plant the grain. After all this has been done, he then waits for nature to do her share of the work, and she does it in due time without outside help. This is a perfect simile to illustrate the method through which one may attain the object of one's definite chief aim. First comes the preparing of the soil to receive the seed, which is represented by faith and infinite intelligence and understanding of the principle of autosuggestion through which the seed of a definite purpose may be planted. Then comes a period of waiting and working for the realization of the object of that purpose. During this period, there must be continuous, intensified faith, which serves as the sunshine and the rain, without which the seed will wither and die in the ground. Then comes realization, harvest time, and a wonderful harvest can be brought forth. I am fully aware that much of what I am proposing will not be understood or believed by the beginner. I remember my own experiences at the start. However, as the evolutionary process carries on its work, and it will do so, make no mistake about this. All the principles described in this and all the other lessons of this course will become as familiar to you as did the multiplication table after you had mastered it. And what is of greater importance still, these principles will work with the same unvarying certainty as does the principle of multiplication. Each lesson has provided you with definite instructions to follow. The instructions have been simplified as far as possible so anyone can understand them. Nothing has been left to the student except to follow the instructions and supply the faith in their soundness, without which they would be useless. I remind you to familiarize yourself with the four major factors you are dealing with in this lesson on accurate thinking: autosuggestion, the subconscious mind, creative thought, and infinite intelligence. They are the four roadways over which you must travel in your upward climb in quest of knowledge. You are in control of the first three, and how you travel these three roadways will be up to you. Therefore, it will also depend on you as to the time and place at which they will converge into the fourth, infinite intelligence. You understand what is meant by the terms autosuggestion and subconscious mind. Let us again make sure that you also understand what is meant by the term creative thought. It means thought of a positive, non-destructive, creative nature. The object of Lesson 8, Volume 2, on self-control, was to prepare you to understand and successfully apply the principle of creative thought. If you have not mastered that lesson, you are not ready to make use of creative thought in the attainment of your definite chief aim. Remember, it is in your subconscious mind that the seed of your definite chief aim is planted, and it is with creative thought that you awaken that seed into growth and maturity. Your subconscious mind will not germinate the seed of your definite chief aim, nor will infinite intelligence translate that purpose into physical reality if you fill your mind with hatred, envy, jealousy, selfishness, and greed. These negative or destructive thoughts will choke out the seed of your definite purpose. Creative thought presupposes that you will keep your mind in a state of expectancy of attainment of the object of your definite chief aim, that you will have full faith and confidence in its attainment in due course and in due order. If this lesson does what it was intended to do, it will bring you a fuller and deeper realization of the third lesson, Volume 1, on self-confidence, and it will also become clear that it is not self-confidence, but rather infinite intelligence that is the real source from which you are drawing your power. Suggestion and the subconscious mind. Autosuggestion is a powerful weapon with which one may rise to heights of great achievement when it is used constructively. Used in a negative manner, however, it may destroy all possibility of success, and if so used continuously, it will actually destroy health. Careful comparison of the experiences of leading physicians and psychiatrists disclosed the startling information that approximately 75% of those who are ill are suffering from hypochondria, which is a morbid state of mind causing useless anxiety about one's health. Stated in plain language, the hypochondriac is a person who believes he or she is suffering with some sort of imaginary disease and often believes they have every disease of which they ever heard. The person who suffers with such a condition is not only unable to think with accuracy, but also suffers from all sorts of destructive, illusory thoughts. Dr. Henry R. Rose is an authority for the following typical example of the power of autosuggestion. If my wife dies, I will not believe there is a God. His wife was ill with pneumonia, and this is the way he greeted me when I reached his home. She had sent for me because the doctor had told her she could not recover. Most doctors know better than to make a statement such as this in the presence of a patient. She had called her husband and two sons to her bedside and bidden them goodbye. Then she asked that I, her minister, be sent for. I found the husband in the front room sobbing and the sons doing their best to brace her up. When I went into her room, she was breathing with difficulty, and the trained nurse told me she was very low. I soon found that Mrs. N. had sent for me to look after her two sons after she was gone. I said to her, "You mustn't give up. You are not going to die. You have always been a strong and healthy woman, and I do not believe God wants you to die and leave your boys to me or anyone else." I talked to her along this line and then read the 103rd Psalm, and made a prayer in which I prepared her to get well rather than to enter eternity. I told her to put her faith in God and to throw her mind and will against every thought of dying. Then I left her, saying, "I will come again after the church service. I will then find you much better." This was on Sunday morning. I called that afternoon. Her husband met me with a smile. He said that the moment I had gone, his wife called him and the boys into the room and said, "Dr. Rose says that I'm not going to die, that I'm going to get well, and I am." She did get well, but what did it? Two things: autosuggestion, superinduced by the suggestion I had given her, and faith on her part. I came just in the nick of time, and so great was her faith in me that I was able to inspire faith in herself. It was that faith that tipped the scales and brought her through the pneumonia. There are cases of pneumonia, perhaps, that nothing can cure. We all sadly agree to that. But there are times, as in this case, when the mind, if worked with in just the right way, will turn the tide. While there is life, there is hope. But hope must rule supreme and do the good that it was intended to. Here is another remarkable case showing the power of the human mind when used constructively. A physician asked me to see Mrs. H. He said there was nothing organically wrong with her, but having made up her mind that she could not retain anything in her stomach, she had quit eating and was slowly starving herself to death. I went to see her and found also that she had no religious belief. She had lost her faith in God. My first effort was to restore her faith in the Almighty and get her to believe that He was with her and would give her power. Then I told her she could eat anything she wanted. Her confidence in me was great, and my statement impressed her. She began to eat from that day. She was out of her bed in 3 days for the first time in weeks. She is a normal, healthy, and happy woman today. What did it? The same forces as those described in the preceding case. Outside suggestion, which she accepted in faith and applied through self-suggestion and inward confidence. There are times when the mind is sick and it makes the body sick. At such times, it needs a stronger mind to heal it by giving it direction and especially by giving it confidence and faith in itself. This is called suggestion. It is transmitting your confidence and power to another, and with such force as to make the other believe as you wish and do as you will. It need not be hypnotism. You can get wonderful results with a patient wide awake and perfectly rational. But the patient must believe in you, and you must understand the workings of the human mind in order to meet the arguments and questions of the patient. Each one of us can be a healer of this sort and thus help our fellow men. It is the duty of every person to read some of the best books on the forces of the human mind and learn what amazing things the mind can do to keep people well and happy. We see the terrible things that wrong thinking does to people, even going to such lengths as to make them positively insane. It is high time we found out the good things the mind can do, not only to cure mental disorders, but physical diseases as well. From the editors. As was noted in both Volume 1 and Volume 2 of The Law of Success, numerous medical professionals have incorporated the concept of autosuggestion under the term the body-mind connection, and the belief that the mind can manifest physical changes in the body has become a part of mainstream medical practice. In the previous volumes, the editors listed the titles of several seminal books and audiobooks that explain in greater detail the medical applications of the power of suggestion. If you have yet to read any of the suggested books or listen to the tapes, we encourage you to do so. And we again offer the following list. Visualization by Adelaide Bry. Ageless Body, Timeless Mind by Deepak Chopra, M.D. Creative Visualization by Shakti Gawain. Focusing by Eugene Gendlin, Ph.D. You Can Heal Your Life by Louise Hay. Healing with Body Energy by W. Brew Joy, M.D. Psycho-Cybernetics by Maxwell Maltz, M.D. Superimmunity by Paul Pearsall, Ph.D. Healing Back Pain by John E. Sarno, M.D. Love, Medicine, and Miracles by Bernie S. Siegel, M.D. Getting Well by O. Carl Simonton, M.D. 8 Weeks to Optimum Health and Spontaneous Healing by Andrew Weil, M.D. Continuing with Napoleon Hill's original text. Napoleon Bonaparte, during his campaign in Egypt, went among his soldiers who were dying by the hundreds of the bubonic plague. he touched one of them and lifted a second to inspire the others not to be afraid, for the awful disease seemed to spread as much by the aid of the imagination as in any other way. The German philosopher Goethe tells us that he himself went where there was malignant fever and never contracted it, because he put forth his will. These giants among men knew something that we are slowly beginning to find out: the power of autosuggestion. We can influence ourselves by believing we cannot catch a disease or be sick. Imagination can kill a person, or it can help you rise to heights of achievement of the most astounding nature, providing it is used as the basis of self-confidence. There are authentic cases on record of men having actually died because they imagined they were cut by a knife across the jugular vein, when in reality, a piece of ice was used and water was allowed to drip so they could hear it and imagine their blood was running out. They had been blindfolded before the experiment was begun. The imaginative faculty of the human mind is a marvelous piece of mental machinery, but it may, and usually does, play tricks on us unless we keep constantly on guard and control it. If you allow your imagination to expect the worst, it will play havoc with you. Young medical students not infrequently become frightened and believe they have every disease on the medical calendar as the result of lectures and classroom discussions of the various diseases. Dr. Schofield describes the case of a woman who had a tumor. They placed her on the operating table and gave her anesthetics, when suddenly the tumor disappeared and no operation was necessary. But when she came back to consciousness, the tumor returned. The physician then learned that she had been living with a relative who had a real tumor, and that her imagination was so vivid that she had imagined this one upon herself. She was placed on the operating table again, given anesthetics, then bandaged around the middle so the tumor could not artificially return. When she awoke, she was told that a successful operation had been performed, but that it would be necessary to wear the bandage for several days. She believed the doctor, and when the bandage was finally removed, the tumor did not return. No operation whatsoever had been performed. She had simply relieved her subconscious mind of the thought that she had a tumor, leaving her imagination nothing to work on but the idea of health. And, as she had never really been sick, of course she remained normal. The mind may be cured of imaginary ills in exactly the same manner that it became diseased with those ills, by autosuggestion. The best time to work on a faulty imagination is at night, just as you are ready to go to sleep. For then the thoughts or suggestions you give your subconscious mind, just as your conscious mind is about to go off duty, will be taken up and worked on during the night. This may seem impossible, but you can easily test the principle in this way. You wish to get up at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning, or at some hour other than your regular time to awaken. Say to yourself, as you are about ready to go to sleep, "I must arise at 7 o'clock tomorrow without fail." Repeat this several times, while impressing upon your mind that you must actually rise at the precise moment mentioned. Turn this thought over to your subconscious mind with absolute confidence that you will awaken at 7 o'clock, and when that hour arrives, your subconscious mind will awaken you. But you must give the command in no uncertain or indefinite terms. In this same way, the subconscious mind may be given any other sort of orders and it will carry them out as readily as it will awaken you at a given hour. For example, give the command, as you are about to go to sleep each night, for your subconscious mind to develop self-confidence, initiative, courage, or any other desired quality, and it will do your bidding. If the imagination can create imaginary ills and send one to bed with those ills, it can also, and just as easily, remove the cause of those ills. The mind seems to be a complicated machine, but in reality, it is the nearest thing to perpetual motion that is known. It works automatically when we are asleep. It works both automatically and in conjunction with the will when we are awake. The mind is deserving of the minutest possible analysis in this lesson, because the mind is the energy with which all thinking is done. To learn how to use accurate thinking, one must thoroughly understand the following. Number 1. The mind can be controlled, guided, and directed to creative, constructive ends. Number 2. The mind can also be directed to destructive ends, and it may, voluntarily, tear down and destroy unless it is carefully controlled and directed constructively. Number 3. The mind has power over every cell of the body, and can be made to cause every cell to do its intended work perfectly, or it may, through neglect or wrong direction, destroy the normal functionary purpose of any or all cells. Number 4. All achievement of man is the result of thought. The physical body is of secondary importance, and in many instances, of no importance whatsoever, except as a place to house the mind. Number 5. The greatest of all achievements, whether in literature, art, finance, industry, commerce, transportation, religion, politics, or scientific discoveries, are usually the results of ideas conceived in one person's brain, but actually transformed into reality by other people through the combined use of their minds and bodies, meaning that the conception of an idea is of greater importance than the transformation of that idea into more material form, because relatively few people can conceive useful ideas, while there are millions who can develop an idea and give it material form after it has been conceived. Number 6. The majority of all thoughts conceived in people's minds are not accurate, being more in the nature of opinions or snap judgments. Accurate thoughts have conquered the air and the sea, explored practically every square mile of the little earth on which we live, and wrested from nature thousands of secrets that, a few generations ago, would have been set down as miracles of the most astounding and imponderable sort. All scientists who have made a study of the human mind readily agree that the surface has not yet been scratched in the study of the wonderful power that lies dormant, waiting, as the oak tree sleeps in the acorn, to be aroused and put to work. Those who have expressed an opinion on the subject believe that the next great cycle of discovery lies in the realm of the human mind. The possible nature of these discoveries has been suggested in many different ways in practically every lesson of this course, particularly in this and the following lessons. If these suggestions appear to lead the student of this philosophy deeper than he or she is accustomed to, that student has the privilege of stopping at any depth desired until ready, through thought and study, to go further. It is not expected that the beginner will immediately assimilate and put into use all that is included in this philosophy. But if the net result is nothing more than to sow the seed of constructive thought in the mind of the student, my work will have been completed. Time, plus the student's own desire for knowledge, will do the rest. Frankly, many of the suggestions passed on through this course would, if literally followed, lead you far beyond the bounds of what is ordinarily called business philosophy. The course goes more deeply into the functioning processes of the human mind than is necessary for the use of this philosophy as a means of achieving business or financial success. However, it is presumed that many students of this course will wish to do just that, and I have had these students in mind throughout the labor of organizing and writing this course. Summary of the Principles of Accurate Thinking. We have discovered that the human body consists of billions upon billions of living, intelligent, individual cells that carry on a very definite, well-organized work of building, developing, and maintaining the body. We have discovered that these cells are directed in their respective duties by the subconscious or automatic action of the mind, that the subconscious section of the mind can be, to a very large extent, controlled and directed by the conscious or voluntary section of the mind. We have found that any idea or thought that is held in the mind, through repetition, has a tendency to direct the physical body to transform such thought or idea into its material equivalent. We have found that any order that is properly given to the subconscious section of the mind, through the law of autosuggestion, will be carried out, unless it is sidetracked or countermanded by another and stronger order. We have found that the subconscious mind does not question the source from which it receives orders, nor the soundness of those orders, but it will proceed to direct the body to carry out any order it receives. This explains the necessity for closely guarding how, and from where, we receive suggestions. It is a fact that we can be subtly and quietly influenced at times, and in ways of which we are not consciously aware. We have found that every movement of the human body is controlled by either the conscious or the subconscious section of the mind, and that not a muscle can be moved until an order to do so has been sent out by one or the other of these two sections of the mind. When this principle is thoroughly understood, we also understand the powerful effect of any idea or thought that we create and hold in the conscious mind until the subconscious mind has time to take over that thought and begin the work of transforming it into its material counterpart. When we understand the principle through which any idea is first placed in the conscious mind and held there until the subconscious picks it up and appropriates it, we have a practical working knowledge of the law of concentration, which will be covered in the next lesson. The value of adopting a chief aim. This lesson on accurate thinking not only describes the real purpose of a definite chief aim, but it also explains in simple terms the principles through which such an aim or purpose may be realized. We first create the objective toward which we are striving through the imaginative faculty of the mind, then transfer an outline of this objective to paper by writing out a definite statement of it in the nature of a definite chief aim. By daily reference to this written statement, the idea or thing aimed for is taken up by the conscious mind and handed over to the subconscious mind, which in turn directs the energies of the body to transform the desire into reality. Desire. Strong, deeply rooted desire is the starting point of all achievement. Desire is the seed of all achievement. It is the starting place behind which there is nothing, or at least nothing of which we have any knowledge. A definite chief aim, which is only another name for desire, would be meaningless unless based on a strong desire for the object of the chief aim. Many people wish for many things, but a wish is not the equivalent of a strong desire, and therefore wishes are of little or no value unless they are crystallized into the more definite form of desire. It is believed that all energy and matter respond to, and are controlled by, a law of attraction that causes elements and forces of a similar nature to gather around certain centers of attraction. In a similar manner, constant, deeply seated desire attracts the physical equivalent or counterpart of the thing desired or the means of securing it. Suggestion and auto-suggestion. Through this and other lessons of the Law of Success course, you have learned that sense impressions arising out of one's environment or from statements or actions of other people are called suggestions, while sense impressions that we place in our own minds are placed there by self-suggestion or auto-suggestion. All suggestions coming from others or from environment influence us only after we have accepted them and passed them on to the subconscious mind through the principle of auto-suggestion. Thus, it is seen that suggestion must become auto-suggestion before it influences the mind of the one receiving it. Stated another way, no one may influence another without the consent of the one influenced, as the influencing is done through one's own power of auto-suggestion. The conscious mind stands, during the hours when one is awake, as a sentinel, guarding the subconscious mind and warding off all suggestions that try to reach it from the outside until those suggestions have been examined by the conscious mind and accepted. This is nature's way of safeguarding the human being against intruders who would otherwise take control of any mind at will. It is a wise arrangement. The value of auto-suggestion in achieving your definite chief aim. One of the greatest uses to which you may direct the power of auto-suggestion is in having it help accomplish the object of your definite chief aim in life. The way to do this is very simple. While the exact formula has been stated in Lesson 2, Volume 1, and referred to in many other lessons of the course, I will describe again the principle on which it is based. Write out a clear, concise statement of what you intend to accomplish as your definite chief aim, covering a period of perhaps the next 5 years. Make at least 2 copies of your statement, one to be placed where you can read it several times a day while you are at work, and the other to be placed where it can be read several times each evening before you go to sleep and just after you arise in the morning. The suggestive influence of this procedure, impractical though it may seem, will soon impress the object of your definite chief aim on your subconscious mind. Within a very short time, you will begin to observe events taking place that will lead you nearer and nearer to the attainment of that object. From the very day that you reach a definite decision in your own mind as to the precise thing, condition, or position in life that you deeply desire, you will observe, if you read books, newspapers, and magazines, that important news items and other data bearing on the object of your definite chief aim will begin to come to your attention. You will also observe opportunities beginning to come to you that will, if embraced, lead you nearer and nearer to the coveted goal of your desire. No one knows better than I how impossible and impractical this may seem to the person who is not a student of psychology. However, the best thing for any person to do is to experiment with this principle until its practicality has been established. The word impossible means less now than ever before in the history of the human race. There are some who have actually removed this word from their vocabularies, believing that we can do anything we can imagine and believe we can do. We know now that the universe is made up of two substances, matter and energy. Through patient scientific research, we have discovered that everything that is or ever has been in the way of matter, when analyzed to the finest point, is nothing but a form. On the other hand, every material thing that man has created began in the form of energy through the seed of an idea that was released through the imaginative faculty of the human mind. In other words, the beginning of every material thing is energy, and the ending of it is energy. All matter obeys the command of one form or another of energy. The highest known form of energy is that which functions as the human mind. The human mind, therefore, is the sole directing force of everything man creates, and what he may create with this force in the future, as compared with that which he has created in the past, will make his past achievements seem petty and small. We do not have to wait for future discoveries for evidence that the mind is the greatest force known to mankind. We know now that any idea, aim, or purpose that is fixed in the mind and held there, with the will to achieve or attain its physical or material equivalent, puts into motion powers that cannot be conquered. English author Charles Buxton said, "The longer I live, the more certain I am that the great difference between men, between the feeble and the powerful, the great and the insignificant, is energy, invincible determination, a purpose once fixed, and then death or victory. That quality will do anything that can be done in this world, and no talents, no circumstances, no opportunities will make a two-legged creature a man without it." Author Donald G. Mitchell has well said, "Resolve is what makes a man manifest. Not puny resolve, not crude determinations, not errant purposes, but that strong and indefatigable will, which treads down difficulties and danger as a boy treads down the heaving frostlands of winter, which kindles his eye and brain with proud pulse beat toward the unattainable. Will makes men giants." The great Benjamin Disraeli said, "I have brought myself, by long meditation, to the conviction that a human being with a settled purpose must accomplish it, and that nothing can resist a will which will stake even existence upon its fulfillment." Sir John Simpson said, "A passionate desire and an unwearied will can perform impossibilities, or what may seem to be such, to the cold, timid, and feeble." And John Foster adds his testimony when he says, "It is wonderful how even the casualties of life seem to bow to a spirit that will not bow to them, and yield to subserve a design which they may, in their first apparent tendency, threaten to frustrate. When a firm, decisive spirit is recognized, it is curious to see how the space clears around a man and leaves him room and freedom." Abraham Lincoln said of General Grant, "The great thing about Grant is his cool persistency of purpose. He is not easily excited, and he's got the grip of a bulldog. When he once gets his teeth in, nothing can shake him off." It seems appropriate to state here that a strong desire to be transformed into reality must be backed with persistency until it is taken over by the subconscious mind. It is not enough to feel very deeply the desire for achievement of a definite chief aim for just a few hours or a few days. The desire must be placed in the mind and held there, with persistence that knows no defeat, until the automatic or subconscious mind takes it over. Up to this point, you must stand behind the desire and push it. Beyond this point, the desire will stand behind you and push you on to achievement. Persistence may be compared to the dropping of water that finally wears away the hardest stone. When the final chapter of your life has been completed, it will be found that your persistence, or lack of this sterling quality, played an important part in either your success or your failure. I watched the Tunney Dempsey fight in Chicago. I also studied the psychology leading up to and surrounding their previous bout. Two things helped Tunney defeat Dempsey on both occasions, despite Dempsey being the stronger of the two men, and, as many believe, the better fighter. And the two things that spelled Dempsey's doom were, first, his own lack of self-confidence, the fear that Tunney might defeat him, and second, Tunney's complete self-reliance and his belief that he could whip Dempsey. Tunney stepped into the ring with his chin in the air, an atmosphere of self-assurance and certainty written in his every movement. Dempsey walked in with a sort of uncertain stride, eyeing Tunney in a manner that plainly queried, "I wonder what you'll do to me." Dempsey was whipped, in his own mind, before he entered the ring, thanks to Tunney's press agents and propagandists, and Tunney's belief in his own superiority. And so the story goes, from the lowest and most brutal of occupations, prize fighting, on up to the highest and most commendable professions. Success is won by the person who understands how to use their power of thought. Throughout this course, much stress has been put on the importance of environment and habit, out of which grow the stimuli that put the wheels of the human mind into operation. Fortunate is the person who has found how to stimulate his or her mind so that its powers will function constructively when placed behind any strong, deeply seated desire. Accurate thinking is thinking that makes intelligent use of all the powers of the human mind and does not stop with the mere examination, classification, and arranging of ideas. Accurate thinking creates ideas and may be made to transform these ideas into their most profitable, constructive form. You will perhaps be better prepared to analyze, without a feeling of skepticism and doubt, the principles laid down in this lesson if you keep in mind that the conclusions and hypotheses are not solely mine. I have had the benefit of close cooperation from some of the leading investigators in the field of mental phenomena. Editor's comment. To illustrate Hill's point that the principles he proposed were accepted by other experts, the editors offer the following list of books and audiobooks by a variety of experts, all of whom are leaders in their fields and whose principles parallel Hill's. Many of these books have been recommended in other lessons or the other volumes of The Law of Success, but they are equally applicable to this section on accurate thinking. Super Creativity by Tony Buzan. The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron. The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen R. Covey. Lateral Thinking, 6 Thinking Hats, and Super Thinking by Edward de Bono. Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain by Betty Edwards. The Zen of Seeing by Frederick Frank. Writing Down the Bones by Natalie Goldberg. Peak Learning by Ronald Gross. Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway by Susan Jeffers. Thinker Toys by Michael Michalko. Super Learning by Sheila Ostrander and Lynn Schroeder. Writing the Natural Way by Gabrielle Rico. Awaken the Giant Within by Anthony Robbins and the complete Anthony Robbins Library of Power Talk audiobooks. Wishcraft by Barbara Scher. Do What You Love, The Money Will Follow by Marcia Sinitar. A Kick in the Seat of the Pants by R. Von Uch. Sell Your Way to the Top by Zig Ziglar. Returning to Napoleon Hill's original text. In the next lesson, on concentration, you will be further instructed in the method of using autosuggestion. In fact, throughout this course, the principle of gradual unfoldment has been followed, paralleling that of the principle of evolution as nearly as possible. The first lesson laid the foundation for the second, and the second prepared the way for the third, and so on. I have tried to build this course by a series of steps, each of which lifts the student just another step higher and nearer the apex of the pyramid that the course as a whole represents. The purpose in building the course in this manner cannot be described in words, but that purpose will become clear to you when you have mastered it, for its mastery will open to you a source of knowledge that cannot be imparted by one man to another. It is attainable only by drawing out and expanding from within one's own mind. With this vague hint as to the reward that awaits all who earnestly and intelligently search for the hidden passageway to knowledge to which I refer, we will now discuss that phase of accurate thinking that will take you as high as you can go, except through the discovery and use of that secret passageway. The following is an excerpt from a poem by Ella Wheeler Wilcox. You never can tell what your thoughts will do in bringing you hate or love. For thoughts are things, and their airy wings are swifter than a carrier dove. They follow the law of the universe. Each thing must create its kind. And they speed o'er the track to bring you back whatever went out from your mind. Thoughts are things. It is the belief of many that every completed thought starts an unending vibration with which the one who releases it will have to contend at a later time. That man is but the physical reflection of thought that was put into motion by infinite intelligence. All thought is creative. However, not all thought is constructive or positive. If you think thoughts of misery and poverty and see no way to avoid them, then your thoughts will create those very conditions. But reverse the order and think thoughts of a positive, expectant nature, and your thoughts will create those conditions. Your thoughts affect your entire personality and attract to you the outward, physical things that harmonize with the nature of your thoughts. This has been made clear in practically every lesson and will be repeated many times more in the lessons that follow. The reason for this constant repetition is that nearly all beginners in the study of the mind overlook the importance of this fundamental and eternal truth. When you suggest to your subconscious mind a definite chief aim that embodies some definite desire, you must accompany with it such faith and belief in the ultimate realization of that purpose that you can actually see yourself in the possession of it. Conduct yourself as you would if you were already in possession of the object of your definite purpose from the moment you suggest it to your subconscious mind. Enrich it with full belief that infinite intelligence will step in and mature that purpose into reality in exact accordance with the nature of the purpose. Anything short of such belief will bring you disappointment. Do not question whether the principles of autosuggestion will work. Do not doubt, but believe. The power to think as you wish to think is the only power over which you have absolute control. Please study the foregoing sentence until you grasp its meaning. If it is within your power to control your thoughts, the responsibility then rests upon you as to whether your thoughts will be of the positive or the negative type, which brings to mind one of the world's most famous poems. It is by William Ernest Henley. Out of the night that covers me, black is the pit from pole to pole, I thank whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul. In the fell clutch of circumstance, I have not winced or cried aloud. Under the bludgeonings of chance, my head is bloody but unbowed. Beyond this place of wrath and tears looms but the horror of the shade, and yet the menace of the years finds and shall find me unafraid. It matters not how strait the gate, how charged with punishments the scroll. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. Henley did not write this poem until after he had discovered the door to that secret passageway to which I referred. You are the master of your fate and the captain of your soul because you control your own thoughts, and with the aid of your thoughts, you may create whatever you desire. As we approach the close of this lesson, let us pull aside the curtain that hangs over the gateway called death and take a look into the great beyond. Look closely and observe that you look at a world of beings of your own creation. They correspond exactly to the nature of your own thoughts as you express them before death. There they are, the children of your own heart and mind, patterned after the image of your own thoughts. Those that were born of your hatred, envy, jealousy, selfishness, and injustice toward others will not make very desirable neighbors. But you must live with them just the same, for they are your children, and you cannot turn them out. You will be unfortunate indeed if you find there are no children that were born of love, justice, truth, and kindness toward others. In the light of this allegorical suggestion, the subject of accurate thinking takes on a new and much more important aspect, doesn't it? If there is a possibility that every thought you release during this life will step out to greet you after death, then you need no further reason for guarding all your thoughts carefully. The term accurate thought, as used in this lesson, refers to the thought that is of your own creation. Thought that comes to you from others, through either suggestion or direct statement, is not accurate thought within the meaning and purpose of this lesson, although it may be thought that is based on facts. I can take you no further in this lesson on accurate thinking. However, you have not yet gone the entire distance. You have only just started. From here on, you must be your own guide. But if you have understood the great truth upon which this lesson is founded, you will not have difficulty finding your own way. Let me caution you again, however, not to become discouraged if the fundamental truth of this lesson has not become clear to you at first. This is the one lesson of the entire course that cannot be fully assimilated by the beginner. You will gain the knowledge only through thought, reflection, and meditation. For this reason, you are instructed to listen to this lesson at least 4 times, at intervals of 1 week apart. It may require weeks or even months of meditation for you to fully comprehend, but that this truth is worth working for. You are also instructed to again listen to Lesson 1, Volume 1, so that you may better understand the law of the mastermind and the relationship between this law and the subjects covered by this lesson on accurate thinking. The mastermind is the principle through which you may become an accurate thinker.